I think we just have some minor technical difficulties, everyone. The show will be with you shortly.
Yep, I've got it all figured out now. All right, formalities begin. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the weekly edition of Trad Tasman Talk. I'm Tim Wilms, Editor-in-Chief of The Unshackled. It is 6 p.m. here in lockdown Melbourne. It's your turn for introduction now, Douay.
Sorry, I have got some weird echoes at the moment, so I'm just... I've got audio feedback coming from you, I believe. That's why I'm waiting. It is 8 p.m. here in Auckland, and we're just having some technical difficulties at the beginning of the show, so hopefully... Oh, there we go. Thank you, Tim. And I do hope everyone can hear me properly.
Yeah, I can hear you, and we, as always, are live on the Right Minds YouTube channel for the first time. Trad Tasman Talk is on the Wilmsfront YouTube channel, and the reason for that is because the Unshackled YouTube channel, which we normally stream to and which you're able to send through super chats directly through YouTube throughout the show, it got a strike just coincidentally this week, Richard Wollstonecraft, who hosts a report from Tiger Mountain, his interview with Senator Fraser Anning the day after the Christchurch massacre, after his statement immediately after it garnered a lot of criticism and outrage, that got mysteriously deleted by YouTube this week for hate speech. So we can't upload or go live to the Unshackled channel for a week. And we are also kicked off the YouTube partner program, which means our channel's been demonetized, though we can reapply to be a YouTube partner once our channel is in good standing. But I think we probably have around about a 0% chance of that being approved.
Well, we are still broadcasting on the Right Minds NZ channel, since we keep 100% with the community standards on the Right Minds channel, so no trouble there. Good to see everybody in the chat there already. And I can apologize again for the technical difficulties. Half of them were my fault. Because it's in entropy, it means that I will post the link in the chat. And
yes,
I will be posting it regularly.
We're still going to be able to receive super chats tonight, and also do the Q&A at the end. For those who are regular viewers of this show but don't know what entropy is, I use it on my own program, Wilmsfront, and also the Uncuckables. It's a YouTube enhanced software, so it's an interface which you just log into it with your Google account, and through that you can watch the stream, also participate in our poll, who will get out of lockdown first. Will it be Melbourne or Auckland? Because we're both still in varying degrees of lockdown. You can put a question in there, and also send a super chat through Entropy, which the great thing about Entropy is Google gets no cut of the super chat. So I just put the link to it in the live chat, or in the Wilmsfront live chat. You're doing it with the Right Minds YouTube chat as well.
We'll do the same format as normal. Once we finish our introductions here, we'll get into the main topics of the show. If there's any bit of news you want us to cover briefly, put it in the chat. I see a few people are doing that already. And then the final 15 minutes of the show, as usual, will be answering questions, any audience questions. If you send a super chat, we will prioritize those. And otherwise, we will pick questions from the chat. So that's the usual. And we'll might as well get into the news. I suppose first the weather, of course. We've had a lot of rain here in Auckland, but I believe that a lot of the rains are over now. The storms that we were promised didn't quite eventuate. It was supposed to be thunderstorms all week, but it was just wet and dreary. As I understand it, it was a little bit worse in Melbourne.
Yes, we had a massive storm last night. I obviously heard it. It was quite... the winds were blowing quite strongly, and unfortunately it's turned tragic. There were three killed, including a four-year-old boy. I'll just go down here. Yeah, so a boy suffered critical injuries after being hit by a falling tree in Blackburn South. Boy was taken to hospital, he later died. A 59-year-old Tacoma man died when a tree fell on his car in Belgrave, which is 2 Melbournes east. The man was driving out of a shopping centre car park when the tree fell and crushed the car shortly after 6 p.m. A 36-year-old woman from Parktail became the third fatality after a tree fell on a car in Fernshaw, northeast of Melbourne. Police say the car was travelling down the Maroondah Highway when it was hit by a falling tree around 6:50 p.m. The woman was sitting in the front passenger seat and died at the scene. The driver, a 24-year-old Flinders man, was taken to hospital with minor injuries. Those two who were in that car, they were outside of their 5 kilometre limit or 5 kilometre radius under stage 4 restrictions. Obviously it's tragic, these people have died, so it sort of seems insensitive to sort of make a sarcastic comment about the lockdown and also the curfew. A 52,000 properties in Melbourne were without power overnight, and also our water supply was contaminated. Yarra Valley Water issued a contaminated water notice for 88 Melbourne suburbs because it led to disinfectant water from the Sylvan Dam entering the water supply system. About 250,000 households have been told to boil their tap water before drinking. And just going up here, the health department has issued guidelines about coronavirus restrictions, exemptions for those affected by the storm. And if I just go further down here, you can leave your home to buy tools to fix fire storm damage, which can be beyond the 5 kilometre radius from your home if necessary. You can do emergency repairs for your family and friends if they cannot do them themselves. You can leave your home if you and your family are at risk. You can stay with family and friends if your homes are uninhabitable. Gee, that's very considerate of the government to
say, it's incredibly generous of your government, Tim. I'm sure that everybody is incredibly pleased to have such nice people running the government. And obviously, the incompetence of the government, you know, they can't even get fresh drinking water at the moment. You know, you have a bad storm and then the suddenly your government water supply is contaminated and you can't drink it anymore.
And it's basically just all that we need in Melbourne during this time.
I'm sure it is not the nicest thing, and I've seen some people in the chat you say as well, stuck home, lonely in Auckland, and I'm sure it's the same in Melbourne for many, many people, and the storms do not make it any better.
Yeah. Now, I was mentioning at the beginning why the Unshackled channel got a strike and demonetized, and I mentioned the interview with Fraser Anning that Richard Wollstonecroft did, which was 18 months ago, but I can't help but that it was a strange coincidence into what was happening in Christchurch this week.
I did mention last week that we would possibly have the sentencing of Brenton Tarrant, the Christchurch mosque shooter. That did happen. He was sentenced to life imprisonment without parole. And that's the first time anybody has been sentenced to no possible release, which was the sentence that everybody was hoping for and sort of expecting. But there were many who were worried that the judiciary in New Zealand is so weak on every other case. People thought, they will find some way to weasel out a different sentence. That is definitely not what happened. And the judge ruled very clearly life without parole. And of course, a lot of people saying, it's just, and not really. I'm the only just sentence for a murderer is capital punishment, and that is a sentence that we haven't had in New Zealand for the last few decades, and it has coincidentally been with the absolute decline in the justice system, where you know, people commit all kinds of heinous crimes and can get out of prison fairly easily. And it seems like they have just you know, been forced to make what is sort of the right decision in this case. You know, the perception has to be correct, and that's something I've discussed in the past. The perception on this sentence had to be right, and that's what they went for. But it's not what should have happened.
And although it started the sentencing on Monday, it wasn't formally handed down the sentence that everyone expected, life without parole, because the victim impact statements were read out, 90 in total, where, basically it was the victims, obviously the 51 murder victims can't speak for themselves, but their family and friends and survivors, and they certainly gave it their most to give it to him and tell him directly to his face what they thought of him.
And yes, a lot of those impact statements, you know, were obviously they obviously to him, he sat there as reported, didn't speak, didn't respond, which to some, you know, again was largely unexpected. Probably was the complete silence. He didn't argue the sentence. He had previously fired his lawyer, and so basically the reporters, he just sat there basically stone faced, said nothing, no emotionless, expressionless. And all of the statements were read out over 3 days. There was one, you said the angry ones got the media coverage usually. So the ones, the more sophisticated statements probably were.
Yeah, the ones calling him a POS, they obviously made the media.
And that's what made the media. You had a guy who pulled the fingers, flipped the bird.
I've got that here.
Said that he was a peasant and so on. I won't read out the whole statement, but. That was kind of, you know, that created the only little bit of media sensation, right? The media was there hoping for sensation. In the end, it was incredibly subdued, which was a good thing for both the victims and everybody else. But that's not quite what I think they were hoping for. They were hoping for something that would generate them a lot more clicks and be a lot more interesting from a media sensation perspective. In the end, what we got probably will, I wonder. It essentially, it fades away, except for possibly the conspiracy theorists wondering, you know, what happened with regards to, they'll never be silenced like in Australia as well. Obviously, with the Port Arthur massacre, the entire thing has faded away, except for the occasional questions that's come from the fringes. That's it.
Because he changed his plea from not guilty to guilty, which surprised a lot of people. That was after the
coronavirus
pandemic and the lockdown.
You can sit around for hours trying to make sense and trying to rationalize things that are not rationalizable, and really there's no point in doing it. None of it made sense. None of the responses. None of the pleas. None of the lack of sentencing, any behavior, absolutely everything he did with regards to this trial and obviously before is entirely nonsensical. And so, yeah, there's nothing really more to be said.
And there's been the discussion about, since he's been sentenced to life, it's going to cost millions of dollars to keep him locked up in maximum security, given that he is an Australian, whether he'll serve his sentence in New Zealand. I saw that Winston Peters, obviously, with the election taking place on October 17th, said he should be sent back to Australia. And I know that there are a few Australians. There was Christy McSweeney on Sky News last night said that, yeah, I sort of understand the Kiwi position. Yeah, he's monster, so we should house him here.
And there is no real agreement to have those sentences served in Australia, which is why the discussion would probably take some kind of act of parliament, which is definitely not going to happen. And there's a wider discussion around New Zealand citizens that are housed in Australian prisons, and whether, you know, they would then be sent back to New Zealand. In the end, it wouldn't be a money-saving exercise. I do believe it would be the right thing to do, would be for both countries to say, you know, your criminals, you know, your citizens can need to be need to serve their cases in, you know, in their respective countries, the country that they're a citizen of. But that wouldn't be a cost-saving exercise for New Zealand, because there are hundreds of New Zealand citizens in Australian prisons.
Yeah, but so this is, not, I not, think they just make a special rule.
That's the idea. But there is no practical mechanism whereby it's going to happen. So it will not get much more discussion now. I think it had some discussion up until this point. Mm. After today, I doubt you will hear of it again. That's my prediction on that. We do have some agreements with civil cases where, you know, orders in New Zealand can be carried out in Australia and vice versa, and enforcement of civil cases could be carried out. But in terms of criminal cases, there is no such law in place. So that's simply not going to happen.
And you can imagine the sort of hype surrounding if he was extradited from New Zealand to Australia. They'd have to get him out of that maximum security. Which prison is he in?
So there's only one maximum security prison in New Zealand. And I suppose that's another part of the trial. The army and the police kind of get their little bit of action as well. So they would take him in a convoy to Whenapai Air Base, put him on a Hercules craft, you know, fly him to Christchurch, then have like a convoy of armored vehicles to transport him. And then at the court, they posted snipers on the roofs, and you know, everybody could get their toys out and walk around. And you know, wouldn't blame the police or army in New Zealand. They don't get much action. But there was no actual, you know, he was a lone wolf acting alone. He wasn't going to bust out. There's nobody nobody was going to make any kind of attempt on that courthouse in any way.
Were probably thinking some sort of revenge attack.
Or revenge attacks and so on, but you know, I don't think they were genuinely expecting any of that. So there was that bit of extra added theater to it, really, in terms of over the top presence in terms of the police and the army, and obviously then shipped back into the maximum security prison that is in Auckland. It's the only place somebody that's serving that kind of sentence could be housed.
Obviously Auckland on the North Island, Christchurch on the South Island. So was he flown there?
Yes, a fly in one of the Hercules cargo carriers that we have. One of the few planes owned by the New Zealand Air Force. That's what they used to transport him. They've done it several times, obviously, for, you know, out of Christchurch. And they did do remote sentencing during the first lockdown. And obviously the lockdown levels were low enough in New Zealand where, that was part of the lockdown concern as well in New Zealand, was they were going to have to delay the sentencing because they had granted at least 50 exemptions from overseas, travel exemptions for victims or family members to come to New Zealand for the sentencing. So they had had those come into New Zealand. They had them in the quarantine, obviously concerned about any kind of coronavirus outbreak that may have delayed it. But all of that was sorted out. The coronavirus numbers have been kept to a point where, they can decide to keep the levels low enough to go ahead with the things that they want to do. So, yeah. But obviously, incredibly expensive endeavor, all of it. Yeah.
One of your links just flashed up on your...
Yes. It happens almost every show, and I don't know why they just pop up. Past chat messages.
So what I was getting at is to extradite him from... I'm not sure if extradition is the right word, or basically prisoner transfer.
That's it would be a prisoner transfer, yeah. Yes. So the extradition is before, is for sentencing, and then obviously the repatriation what is, I think there's a different term that they use, but when somebody has served their sentence, and I am deportation, that's the one. When they deport the criminals after they've served their sentences. That's what Australia does to New Zealand. They, you know, send our criminals back home. That's in place. But yeah, prisoner transfer, there is simply no mechanism for that in place between Australia, between the trans-Tasman nations.
Because I can imagine the media circus, if he's being transferred out of Auckland and flown to Australia, you can just imagine media spectacle. Yep. The helicopters and planes at the airport, and they'd probably show him with a bag over his head in those chains and that, and it would just be, that's not what the victims would want, I don't think.
No, so now that it's done, he's in a cell by himself for the rest of his life. The only speculation I've seen from a lawyer around why he may have simply said nothing and not attempted to debate the plea was that there was some kind of deal in terms of getting amenities in prison. It was basically, let the trial go ahead, don't do anything, you know, don't do anything to upset the victims, don't make it any harder, don't make it any worse. You're still going to get life imprisonment, but perhaps you can, you know, your prison life will be slightly less harsh. That's a possibility. That was speculation by a lawyer that I saw. We will see down the line if there is a journalist that decides to investigate that, it may come out. Other than that, I don't expect, I expect this to be the end in terms of, you know, I don't see us talking about this again. I don't see anything popping up in the media again. Because like you said, if they decide to do some kind of prisoner transfer, you dig it all up. You got to go through it all over again.
So sort of done...
Nobody wants that. To
get better amenities, it reminds me of how Hannibal Lecter, he sort of provides his expertise in response for a slightly less solitary confinement, like a cell with a window or something.
Yes, so that is the only rationalization you could make of what happened. Other than that, none of it really makes sense. In terms of his behavior from a selfish perspective for himself, that's the only thing that would make sense.
Well, let's move on to the respective coronavirus situations in our respective locations. And when I say coronavirus situation, I'm not just talking about cases, but the lockdown as well. I get the alerts from the New Zealand news outlets today. They're still finding 4 or 5 roundabout new cases every day.
Yeah, it was a dozen today, supposedly 7 in the isolation facilities. So that's from coming back from overseas. So yeah, we're still getting about 6 every single day. For the past 2 weeks, same numbers. It keeps getting into new places. So the latest thing was a church and weddings, it was one wedding, a very large wedding, supposedly with 400 people that had taken place in West Auckland.
It would have been a while back before the lockdown.
Yes, so this would have been 11th, it was between 7 and 11 August. So that is... Yeah, that's basically we're chasing up a couple of new cases and directions.
Are they all traced back to that Auckland cluster?
They're still saying everything is still to the one case. They're still chasing the one case of the Chinese coronavirus that escaped. Jacinda still won't admit it escaped from the border facilities. That is a baseless speculation that I'm engaging on here. The magical virus that's spontaneously generated in the middle of Auckland and is spreading around.
And so you're still under alert level 3. It was extended until Sunday, but you're apparently not going down to alert level 2. You're sort of going down to alert level 2.5.
Yes, every country, the entire nation will be under alert level 2. But there will be special restrictions for Auckland, of course, as predicted. And obviously, on top of that, we talked about this last week, we get compulsory mask wearing on public transport. And Auckland will have gathering restrictions limits to 10, basically, and the rest of the country can have gatherings of 100. The Auckland transport I said Auckland Transport, but it is the public transport throughout the entire nation, I believe. I'll have to double check that link now.
Yeah. And I know that when you're allowed to go to your work, you catch public transport, so you'll have to don a face covering unless you want a... What's the fine going to be?
Yeah, so the fines have been announced to be, you can get an instant fine of $300, so $300 infringement.
Oh, that's worse than ours, $200.
Yeah, but once it's adjusted for currency exchange and inflation, we may come out pretty even by the end of this. Or you can get $1,000 imposed by the courts. If you dare challenge it, you could get $1,000. So it's lovely, wonderful. It is public transport throughout all of New Zealand. I don't see in here there's anything specific about Auckland, which obviously is the thing that's
so it's
been
all
the most,
throughout
my
New
focus,
Zealand now.
Yes, my focus has been on Auckland, but I can't see anywhere that's Auckland specific. And some of our viewers who are watching from outside of Auckland might be able to confirm if that is the case. If you're if you are a user of public transport. You do have exceptions, of course, if you are, if you have a health condition or a reasonable, if you're able to say, I have a condition that I can't wear a mask, that's fine. It'll be interesting to see how it goes. The police have announced they will be going with an educational approach, as always. So New Zealand police like to get, massive power, and they kind of like to ease into it slowly. Unlike the Australian police, who goes straight for the chokeholds.
Oh, well, that's the Victoria police, emphasize.
The Victoria police, they'll go straight for choking. The New Zealand police like to just ease you in. So supposedly they're going to do that for a week or two, and then they'll start hitting people with fines. But they said bus drivers, train drivers won't have to enforce it. So it'll be a case of they'll either have random police patrolling buses and trains, or it'll be like you call the snitch hotline to say, like, I see somebody sitting on the train next to me, somebody sitting on the bus across from me and they're not wearing a mask. Can you send a squad car to the next station?
They should roll out buttons on the buses and trains. If you see someone not wearing a mask, press it.
COVID panic button. Exactly.
Yes.
I don't know if they have doing. It's not clear how they handle exemptions as well. Maybe you get to wear a special badge or something to show you have an exemption to the mask.
That seems like a practical idea.
Yeah, but we'll see what they come up with. It's just simply we will find out next week. I do have a little bit of an advantage because the train I usually take is being cancelled for the next 2 weeks. So I may be staying home a little bit longer. I may have to take a different route. Who knows whether I will end up on public transport. But if so, I will report back how things are looking on the public transport either this week or next week or possibly in 3 weeks. Because the assessments will be done weekly, so it won't be until next week that we will kind of know where things are going. So it will probably be announced Friday, 1 p.m., 5 p.m. They like to put it somewhere in the, sometimes if it's bad news, they usually like to shove it back later in the evening. The verdict will be revealed before next week's show. So.
Oh, well, that's been the case in Victoria. The later Dan Andrews has his daily press conferences. It's really, really, it's really bad news. And if it's late on a weekend, then it's extremely bad news. Though, in a sign that things are improving in Victoria with regard to our coronavirus curve, he had a press conference at 10:30 a.m. on Wednesday. He's never had a press conference that early, so that obviously means that there's not much bad news. But I'll go to our. It was announced on Monday. We've got Department of Health and Human Services Victoria new infographics now. New data infographics. So last 24 hours we had 113. New cases. We had 113 new cases yesterday. We've had four days in a row now where the cases have been under 150. So that is good. All the, obviously the 12 lives lost, that's tragic. It was 23 yesterday, and basically 99% of the deaths now were, have been in aged care outbreaks and settings, which we've had federal parliament back this week. So the blame game between who's, because the federal government is responsible for aged care facilities, but obviously it was the Victorian government's mismanagement of hotel quarantine that let the virus out. We've had the judicial inquiry continue this week with a lot of the shocking stories. Well, they're finally becoming on the record now. Our active cases continue to go significantly down, so hopefully by the end of this weekend we'll be under 3,000 active cases. We're at 3,141. As you can see, total cases now 18,222 that we've had. Over 2 million tests, so our state death toll is 496, so it'll go over 500, but 15,000 have now recovered now. And we've got, now you can look up the Victorian case numbers by local government area and also by postcode as well. This is the daily new cases in Victoria, the curve. That's the first wave there. And then you can see it peaked with that close to 700 new cases, but it's been going down, down, down. Active cases in Victoria, you can see where it peaked at the beginning of the stage four lockdown's been going consistently down.
Don't worry, once you're out of stage four lockdown, you'll get another month or two of reprieve, and then you'll go wave three, and it'll be...
Well...
There's still no discussion. There's no way out, right? It's just endless. That's the goal. It's endless lockdowns, right? Keep going until everything's destroyed. That's the that's still the plan.
Dan has reached his 6 month limit under the Public Health and Wellbeing Act 2008, which he actually passed as a Victorian Health Minister to declare a state of emergency. Our stage four lockdown is due to end on September 13th. Which is just over 2 weeks away. So we're almost two-thirds through this stage four six-week lockdown. So he on Monday announced that he was going to try and pass legislation to be able to extend his state of emergency powers and that of the Chief Health Officers, Dr. Brett Sutton, for another 12 months, which means that if that passed, he'd be able to put us all back into lockdown just at a moment's notice.
For another 12 months.
But the Parliament hasn't sat, the whole Parliament, since May. So he has to go before the Parliament now to pass this legislation. He doesn't have a majority, and the Legislative Council, the Liberal and National Opposition, came out firmly on the Monday afternoon, said we'd be voting no to this power grab. So he has to get four of the 12 crossbenchers, including the former Labor power broker Adam Somniak, who he sacked for his participation in branch stacking using taxpayer-funded staff. That was exposed by 60 Minutes a couple of months ago. 60 Minutes this week, they exposed branch stacking on the Liberal Party side here in Victoria. That wasn't quite as sensational as the Labor scandal, but I'm sort of digressing with the news there. The crossbench, obviously, as you can imagine, were inundated with Victorians who were angered and anxious about living under a state of emergency for potentially another 12 months. Daniel Andrews has said this is the only way to make sure that that he can continue to make the rules about isolation, restrictions, and face covering mandates. Apparently there's no other way other than unilateral executive power for another 12 months. It looks like he might get 6 months extension, not the 12 months.
It's the old trick. Ask for a lot, and they'll give you a little, which is all you need, right?
Mm. We still have no idea what the restrictions will be after September 13th. Daniel Andrews has hinted we won't drop down to stage two, which this is the thing, because he said it will be a gradual reopening, so he'll probably go to stage three for Melbourne, maybe stage two for regional Victoria, but it'll be a new stage three because
it's like I said, the level two, whatever level three, the conditions change all the time. They just keep the numbers, but you can't predict. Oh yes, cool. Stage or level 1, 2, 3, 4 is going to look like this. It's you know, obviously intentionally altered every single time.
Yeah, and they say that the reason they haven't announced anything yet is because they want to be guided by the data. They want to know where they'll need restrictions to be, ongoing restrictions to be targeted.
I see, based on what we're talking now, I see somebody in the chat has mentioned Yuri Bezmenov, who has been in the news recently because the Call of Duty franchise ran a trailer with Yuri Bezmenov. But he was the one who talked about the sort of demoralization as a path to the destruction of a society. And that's pretty much what it is, right? It's the total demoralization of the country. Everything's unexpected. Everything changes. Nobody can make any plans for the future, and everybody starts to give up.
Because Southeast Queensland, certain local government areas in Brisbane were plunged last Saturday into a mini lockdown immediately. Outdoor gatherings were limited to 10 people. So if you had plans for, say, a birthday party or a large barbecue. Yep.
Big event, people planning weddings, people who have, who are trying to have funerals, every happy and sad occasion, no matter what it is, all of it has to go. You're just yourself by yourself in your little isolated bubble, and the government will keep you alive because dying is no longer an option.
You're allowed to. The government allows you to die as long as it's not COVID related.
Oh, yeah, that's
which we'll get into shortly.
Yeah, and I've got another story here from this week, I think, which fits in perfectly. The New Zealand police have just announced that they are now taking a zero tolerance approach on speeding drivers all year round. So previously, and I've talked about the police easing in their powers in New Zealand, they used to. During public holidays, they would have this zero tolerance approach. But now the zero tolerance is all year round. So if you're 1 kilometer over the speeding limit, they can tax you. They can send you a little bit extra tax bill if you're one kilometer, 2 kilometers over. And you used to have to be, a little bit more, like usually closer to 10% over the limit and, before they would consider it. But now it's obviously, we found out we can stop people from dying on the roads if we lock them in their houses. And if we force everybody to drive slower, then we can stop more people from dying. The same arguments could be applied every year now to the flu, because usually we have 500 or 600 people in New Zealand who die of the flu, influenza. Hey, you can wipe out influenza with the lockdown every single year.
Yeah, you just wonder whether the new normal be a winter lockdown for every city.
I can see it coming. I would have laughed at you maybe even a month or two ago, but that's rationally where this goes now, because the government can now decide what's too dangerous for you, what's going to kill you, or but in our case, it's not even likely to kill us. But what can kill the people who have various complications been, already? People who are already sick,
It's people who are already dying. People in their hundreds Melbourne. And I've mentioned this before. And when he announced, because he's announced quite a few people who've died from COVID in their hundreds, and it made me think, wow, I didn't know we had so many people in Melbourne who were over 100. They're just the ones that he's confirmed have died. So we've got a lot of centennials here in Melbourne.
Yes, yeah. And normally you wouldn't hear if one had died. No. And you wouldn't know how many you've got. And obviously they die quite frequently because the closer, well, the older you get, your chance of death keeps increasing until you're the last one left, at which point it becomes 100.
So we began the show talking about, obviously, Christchurch Muslims, obviously venting their anger and grievance against the terrorist who killed 51 of their countrymen. But we've seen Muslims in Melbourne this week. They've also gotten angry with the lockdown. It's all centered on the suburb of Dandenong, and it's basically it all stemmed from the patriarch of this Albanian Muslim family, the Abizi family. What's happened is that the local Muslims in this area have been going out for daily exercise at 5 p.m. Coordinated, so there's lots of people there, and yeah, obviously the Victoria Police they have enforced this lockdown very draconianly, and it all spilled over Wednesday night here. I played this on the Uncuckables last night, but I'll play it for your audience as well. What happened? So as you can see there, the police very aggressively shutting down that dissent. And also a what's gone viral as well is this Australian imam urging other Muslims to resist fascism and dictator Dan. I'll play this for you now.
Sounds good.
With the wider community, like, which is standing against this tyranny, against this fascism, which is happening in our country. Especially what that dictator Dan Andrews is doing to our fellow Australian in Victoria. My call to my Muslim brothers and sisters, this is your role as the followers of the prophets, Moses, Jesus, Noah, Abraham, and Muhammad, peace be upon all of them. This is your role to stand up against any tyranny which is causing harm to humanity. I'm not calling you to stand up for the Muslims. I'm calling you to stand up for everyone.
That just shows how surreal 2020 has become. That you and I, we've been, obviously, and I would say rightly critical of the Islamization of our nations, but Australian Muslims wanting to stand up for freedom against tyranny, and at these daily exercise walks are playing the Australian national anthem. That's all that I've ever wanted them to be, patriots and want to be free.
Very good. Yeah, I like it. And I've actually been reading a lot of more books about Islam, and sort of realized that we've got so many leftists and these progressives and Marxists, and you know, Muslims are actually far more naturally conservative. And I'm getting to the stage where I'd say that I've been wrong. Not for the things that I've criticized them for, but that maybe been criticizing the wrong people all along.
And all of a sudden, as you know, Muslims, they some of them have white skin, some of them have tan skins.
But it's a race. It's a multicolored race.
Yes, but because they are rebelling against the dear leader Dan Andrews, they're now white supremacists, because this is what a local Greens member, Dr. Rhonda Garrett, said about them. A group of white supremacists fight the state government, the chief medical officer, and the police who are protecting the health of Victorians. Imagine being newly arrived, living in Dandenong, and having to face them every day. And Albanian Muslims, let's have a brief history lesson there. There was an attempted genocide against them during the Balkans War in the 90s and the Kosovo campaign. The Albanian Muslims learnt. They didn't follow the orders of the Yugoslav authorities.
That's right. And nobody would suggest that they should have. I've actually got a book by an Australian doctor, and I forget his name. I'll have to pull it out next week. There was an Australian doctor who actually went there, and he sort of fought on the. On the front lines of that war, and you know, helped people with his medical skills. Quite an interesting book, and maybe I can talk a little bit more about it next week. But yes, obviously the white supremacist comment made me crack up too, because I know that one of my favorite apologists, David Wood, he likes to talk about he cites the hadith where Muhammad speaks quite disparagingly of dark-skinned people, and he talks about he does these skits where he gets a guy who pretends to be a Klansman to talk about how great Muhammad is, Muhammad is the whitest prophet and the greatest white man, and all of this stuff. He does it satirically, of course, but there's actually a very strong element of that in Islam. Yeah.
And Dandenong, it's a safe Labour seat, nearly has an entire Labour council, but that looks like...
That could be changing.
Yeah, and we have local government elections, I mentioned last week, still proceeding in October. And it just goes to... Because I'm sure it's the same in New Zealand, all the diversity offers in the local police multicultural outreach. Yes. That's just been completely wiped out, all that outreach in one week. But
yeah,
it basically shows that once the local multicultural groups don't toe the line of the people who they're trying to get the votes from, then they just turn against them. It's obviously the same with how they turn on LGBT people who don't vote left, feminists who don't vote left. It's going to be the same with the Muslims. Unless you are a communist, you're no longer useful to them.
And that's exactly what will happen. And that's genuinely is the case where if you've got especially larger immigrant populations that tend to be more conservative, they tend to be more religious, they have more children, over time the nihilistic sort of progressive neo-Marxist establishment sort of gets squeezed out. And they haven't realized that yet. They haven't cottoned on to that. But it's something I'm starting to see more and more, even in New Zealand. They eventually are going to get, things are not looking up for them in the long run. Obviously, they've got short-term goals. And due to their lack of children, they tend to not be able to think ahead very much. And that's going to be to their detriment.
And what's been promoted by the 99% Unite anti-lockdown pro-freedom activists, and also by those who are not associated with them, is a Freedom Day for September 5, nationwide protest against the lockdown. Well, Facebook just deleted that event, and a 76-year-old man was arrested today over a planned rally. So,
he's one of the guys they're trying to save.
Yes, he is. Yeah. So, yeah.
He's been arrested for his own safety, of course.
Yeah. Police warn those inciting public gatherings to stop being selfish.
Inciting gathering. I was not expecting to hear that line, but yes, you can now incite a gathering.
Assistant Commissioner Luke Cornelius said police were poised to take further action after several members of the community marched into the streets during stage 4 lockdown under the guise of exercise. We will be ready to take action. We're not idiots. Wow. And the rest of Victorians are not idiots. Well, I'd beg to differ. Because we had polling this week by Roy Morgan that said that majority of Victorians supported the lockdown, the curfew, the masks, the 5 kilometer limit and not being able to visit friends and family. So
everybody loves it. I'm signed to one of these polls that just like the elections in these countries where the dictator wins 98% of the votes.
Yeah, so the quiet Victorians, well, I should call them the sheeple Victorians, are still very much in yeah. line. So
It will be interesting to see. Yeah.
Says, stop playing us and the wider community for fools. Just for one moment, stop thinking about yourselves. Well, I think they're not thinking about themselves. They're thinking about their economic damage that the lockdowns are causing. Mr. Cornelius said that police have tried to sway organizers to cancel or postpone the protest and warned social media was being monitored for further planning. And just this afternoon,
I just want to back that up just before you go on. We've had a report now release the figures. The median income in New Zealand has dropped by 7.6%. For the first time on record, median income in New Zealand has fallen. 7.6% is how much median incomes are down in New Zealand. That's the kind of damage that we're talking about here. Carry on.
Just this afternoon, Rafael Fernandez, one of the 99% Unite leaders who I had on my Monday night edition of Wilmsfront, his Facebook account has been deleted. It shows that they're, obviously Facebook and under the nudging of various authorities are now taking more decisive action.
Yeah. And are the anti-lockdown protests in Australia very sort of focused on the lockdown? Because we've got our ones in New Zealand as well every week now being organised called Liberty March or NZ Liberty March. And I think they're still on Facebook. I'm not sure how much longer for, but they're doing protests, you know, every single Saturday until the lockdowns are over. But there's a lot of 5G, it's called the conspiracy theorists. They've got all of their different different interest groups vying for different messages rather than a united one against lockdowns.
Anti-pedophilia as well. And the commissioner that I just mentioned, Luke Cornelius, he actually, I'll play the clip here. He had a huge slag off at the tinfoil hat brigade. So I'll just play this clip for the audience. Oh, that's not it.
Wrong clip. But it's an issue in New Zealand.
Here we go.
Look, there are any number of groups out there. And, you know, if you just did a Google search on 5G, anti-vaxxers, anti-mask, look, the tinfoil hat-wearing brigade are alive and well out there in our community. And they're taking every opportunity to leverage the current situation to serve their own ridiculous notions about so-called sovereign citizens, about constitutional issues, and about how 5G is going to kill your grandkids. I mean, it's just crazy. It's batshit crazy nonsense.
Yes, he wants to keep you healthy, that Assistant Commissioner, because he is the personification of health. Himself.
Yeah, absolutely. But it is a real issue in New Zealand where people obviously don't necessarily agree with different messages and maybe don't want to be associated with those messages. And it becomes a bit of a free-for-all on that front. But so far, the New Zealand police have taken a hands-off approach, unlike the Australians, the Victorian police, who like to have a hands-on approach.
Yes, very hands-on approach, hands around the throat, as you saw, if you're not wearing a mask.
or synchronized exercise.
Of course, the Australia-wide issue, the biggest crisis nationwide when it comes to coronavirus restrictions is the state border closures by premiers and chief ministers. And today we had the first death directly connected to state border closures, a heartbreaking story. Outrage over state borders after unborn baby dies. This was Ray Hadley on 2GB. He detailed the tragic story of a pregnant mother losing one of her unborn twins after being refused entry to Queensland for emergency surgery. Because for people living on the New South Wales north coast, Queensland hospitals are closer than Sydney ones. The Benalla-based family was forced to wait 16 hours for an emergency flight to a Sydney hospital after a doctor advised them they would not be able to cross the border. Sadly, one of the unborn twins passed away. Ray, who was the father, blasted the border restrictions, saying she wasn't coming from a hotspot. It's true. The Premier in Queensland, Anastasia Palaszczuk, has thrown her hands in the air and said, I don't know anything about it. Well, Anastasia Palaszczuk, she has basically killed this baby. She has blood on her hands for that. Well, she is the Premier who legalized abortion in Queensland, so we know that she's proud of passing legislation to make baby killing easier.
Yeah. It's for the, you know, that's right. Unborn lives don't matter. They're happy to murder children, no problem at all.
Yeah, because it's more important to keep a 99-year-old person alive rather than a nearly born baby.
Absolutely, and that genuinely is more important to them, and that is sickening.
And so, in response to this, this just happened today. Scott Morrison, he's now finally put his foot down on the state border closures. There was a Daily Telegraph Bush summit in Cooma this afternoon. He said a key task for the medical expert panel will establish a clear medical definition of a coronavirus hotspot in order for states and territories to effectively rule out containment strategies. Australia was not built to have internal borders. In fact, the very point of federation was to not have them. That was the point of Australia. Yes, that's why they included Section 92 in the Constitution, permitting free trade, commerce, and intercourse between the states. And he says, I know that state borders are putting enormous stress and strain on Australians, especially those in regional communities. He did this week assert federal authority when it came to lower levels of government agreements with foreign governments, mainly targeting Daniel Andrews signing up to Victoria to China's One Belt and One Road, reasserting under the Australian Constitution the federal government's power to legislate for external affairs. And Daniel Andrews was very salty at his daily press conference when he was asked about it, because it's essentially going to be cancelled. And Clive Palmer, as I've previously said, he's challenging the WA's hard border closure through the courts. The federal court, they upheld WA's hard border closure, but they're the federal court. The ultimate arbiter is the High Court. So his case is going before the High Court now, who have a history of applying of strictly having a black letter strict interpretation of the Constitution. They don't consider potential fallout, political fallout or anything like that, as demonstrated by their rulings in the dual citizenship crisis. They are the ultimate arbiters of what Australia's Constitution means. And I talked about last week, the WA Parliament passed legislation to deny Clive Palmer natural justice. Now their newspaper, The West Australian, they said that there's more active cases in WA from Clive Palmer's court action than coronavirus cases.
Oh. Sorry. Very good. We have gone to the full time. We haven't got any Q&A at the moment. I'm happy to go for another 10-15 minutes if people do have questions. I've just been asked about super chats. The link is in the YouTube chat. If you click through, you should be able to send a super chat like you normally would on YouTube, and that will guarantee we answer your question. And we will do that for the next 10 minutes. And otherwise, we will pick some questions from the chat before we wrap up.
Yeah, but please use Entropy, because it's much easier. I don't, depending on how this week goes, because obviously, well, we're not monetized on the Unshackled YouTube channel, so we have to use Entropy, but make a decision about whether to keep streaming here to the Wilmsfront channel or back to the Unshackled channel.
Entropy chat is nice. You can ask questions there straight away without doing a super chat. There is a special questions box up in the top left-hand corner. And I see there's one question in there already, so we might as well start with that one.
Bieber Anti-Bullying has said, thoughts on Daisy Cousins being attacked by Antifa terrorists like Sammy Sara, I don't know who that is, and Sleeping Giants. Well, they're the Murdoch advertising boycott HQ for saying Kyle Rittenhouse, he's the 17-year-old militia member who shot dead two Antifa members who were rioting in Wisconsin, who were going to kill him. He acted in self-defense. One of them was a known pedophile. Another one that he shot was a known domestic abuser. Daisy Cousins, she shared on her Instagram, Kyle Rittenhouse did nothing wrong. Yes, they're going hard after Daisy Cousins now, trying to cancel her now, because obviously she appears regularly on Sky News, has a very popular YouTube channel, and has been announced as a speaker for CPAC Australia in November. Now she's trending now on Australian Twitter, but she hasn't backed down at all.
That's good.
From this.
Definitely stand, you know, I do hope that she stands her ground there, obviously, much like Kyle did. And he's, it's just sad to see him be charged now. But, you know, from the footage that probably just about everybody has seen, he was very clearly acting in self-defense and, you know, fairly restrained in a pretty good shot, too.
Lynn Wood, he's the lawyer who got the two defamation settlements for Nicholas Sandman from the CNN and Washington Post, who addressed the Republican National Convention this week, the Covington boy who was defamed as a racist. He's offered to defend Kyle. So, and I heard that there was another lawyer as well. So he certainly. The fake news narrative that he just decided to just go out on the street and kill random people, people aren't buying that.
No, and like you said, he's got Nick Sandman's lawyer, which should set him up a good stead. I've seen Michelle Malkin is doing fundraising, you know, making sure that the money goes to the right place. And obviously, this is 2020, all of the footage is out there, right? Everybody can watch him get attacked. Everybody can see. Can look up the criminal records of the guys who attacked him. You know, it's the media narrative simply cannot stick.
And if YouTube,
obviously, though,
that,
his life in many ways, his life has already been ruined, though, right? I mean, he's 17. He's, you know, obviously he got his his name plastered all over the news with incredibly defamatory headlines. And you know.
Nick Sandman, one and a half years on, has bounced back. So there's hope for
Kyle. There is hope for him, obviously,
And it's ludicrous that he's been charged with two counts of first-degree murder.
Yeah, that's absolutely ludicrous, absolutely.
Obviously, you had your MAGA hat there. And as we've previously said, there's two MAGAs now.
MAGAs. We're doing Make I Don't Go Away as
which
well.
Which is October 17th, we'll be doing a election night live stream for.
Yeah.
And also the other MAGA...
might be the other... currently scheduled for October 17th. Yes. We'll see if that happens. We had cancelled all of these shows, and now suddenly a lot of things have come up, and the election's been delayed, and we're still here week after week. So,
November 3 is the U.S. MAGA. Trump gave his acceptance speech for the Republican nomination for president. The Republican National Convention. It was much more slick than the amateur Zoom Democratic National Convention.
Yeah, absolutely. Watched a couple of little clips from it. Didn't really have the time to watch any of the whole speeches, except I did watch all of Nick Sandman's speech, of course. And somebody sent me a screenshot of Trump's one. He had a full house in terms of audience on the lawn.
Masks and practicing social distancing.
Because everybody knows it's a farce. Everybody knows that at least on his side, and these people are not worried, nor should they be.
We have had some further bad breaking news. Is that in Queensland, schoolies, where all the U12s go up to the Gold Coast to celebrate completing their schooling, lots of parties, drinking has been cancelled. And obviously their Year 12 education throughout Australia has been greatly impacted, especially those Year 12s in Victoria aren't at school currently. They have to do remote learning. So that's just another salt in their wound, that there won't be any time to kick back for them in Queensland. Well,
we've got a super chat here, which is which is a follow-up from what we were just talking about from Clarke, for $10 Australian, and her pronouns are she,
yes,
her,
yes,
for Tim's benefit.
It's ma'am. Tim,
it's ma'am to you. Tim, have you asked Daisy on? I'm not sure if she's too popular for you, Tim, or how.
Oh, she has. She has been on my channel a couple of times. Back in, it was when I interviewed her at Liberty Fest. That was September 2018, and she also came on my show. It was January 2019. So I haven't spoken to her since then. But I probably could reach out to her again. Daisy, I know a lot of people because she has this unique speaking voice and dresses up a quite extravagantly. I noticed that the Antifa on Twitter today said that she dresses up like a plantation owner. You know, the implication there. Yeah, Daisy, she is exactly the same off air as she is on air. She's the same nice, polite person. She's always had her feet firmly on the ground. When I interviewed her at Liberty Fest all the way back, she waited for 15 minutes on the couch while I was interviewing Bettina Arndt. She could have just, if she wanted to, like walk off not be bothered waiting, but she sat there patiently. So she's extremely humble, down to earth. I just want to put that on the record.
Thank you for that. And if we have any other questions come up, we might take one more that we've got time for. I did want to provide a little court case update as well, since most people watching this will know that I was raided by the police back in January, which feels like an eternity ago. It truly has been the most bizarre year this year. And thanks to coronavirus, has given the courts an excuse to drag their feet. But we do, we're finally in a proper discovery phase with the police. They're actually sending me now documents, thanks to my lawyer and the courts. They have to now send me the documents that I requested from them in January about my case. So I get the all of their emails and the proper warrant request that they made. And I'll hopefully do a proper public update on that in the near future. We're still waiting on some more stuff. But it is incredibly clear that there was a very heavy political motivation behind what the police did.
Imagine my shock.
Imagine anybody's shock. They mentioned my right wing political organization.
Is that the word that dissatisfaction? They use? Right,
yes, wing. I quote, this is an exact quote, right wing political organization, and dissatisfaction. I was dissatisfied with the legislation. So all of that makes me a very, very bad person, apparently.
Yeah, apparently you're not supposed to object to government legislation.
Yeah, well, and certainly, yeah. And, anything, and they did rely on, as I said, they relied on things that are put in the public record, and they use that as an, they went after me for these political reasons based on stuff that I had provided in the public realm. Yeah.
And we should also remind the audience that you are standing at the election for the new Conservative Party, though it seems now you're being eclipsed by the New Zealand Public Party.
Everybody is asking about that. About that. At least last week they were. I was gonna say they're not standing any candidate. Oh yeah, they are. So Jamie Lee Ross obviously is the MP who we've talked about on the show many times over the past year. Is against me in Botany. It's probably a deep blue seat, though, so the former Air New Zealand boss, Christopher Luxon, is there too. I'm looking forward to the election. It's definitely, we are definitely actually getting a bit more profile. We're getting a bit more coverage, and more so while in the online space, being eclipsed a little bit by the sort of the newer appearances on the stage. There is a little bit more permeation through into the rural areas, into some of the old school conservative media, like Leighton Smith. Is actually an Australian, but he was a broadcaster in New Zealand for many, many years. He had our party leader, Leighton Baker, on his podcast recently, and it is the most listened to podcast in New Zealand. So there's some good stuff happening in that political area. But yeah, it's not necessarily the answer to our problems. For me, it's worth putting a little bit of effort into that as well. I think we've got to tackle this from as many angles as we can.
It's going to be a bumper election period in October, because October the 3rd is Australian Capital Territory election here in Australia, then October 17th New Zealand election, October 31st is the Queensland state election, so the people of Queensland will have the opportunity to vote out baby killer Anastasia Palaszczuk, and then I already mentioned beginning of November the US presidential election. So it's going to be a busy period, hopefully, in Melbourne. By that period, we'll have some relaxation here in Melbourne of coronavirus restrictions, but we've still got 2 weeks to go of this stage four. Mm-hmm. There's still the showdown in the Victorian Parliament next week over the state of emergency legislation. And yeah, there's obviously still the Victoria Police operation against dissent, which is why in my shows now I say I would never advocate for people to break the law.
Because you wouldn't want your door to be broken down either, would you?
No, I don't want to be on that list.
No, you don't want to be on the list. And Felt, thank you, everyone. We will probably wrap up the show at this point. I see the poll. I've got to look at the results on your poll. Who will get out of lockdown first? People are confident that Auckland will get out of lockdown before Melbourne. Officially, we are moving down to level 2.5 this week. I'm not going to truly count us out of lockdown until we're properly on the old level two. So 2.5 means we're going to be on this level for at least two more weeks. But I believe you've got about three to go. So we'll see. We'll find out next week who's on the right track for being released. And it could be neither. That should have been an option, really.
Yeah. So I think the message at the end of the show is thanks for everyone for watching on the Wilms Front and Right Minds YouTube channels. Yep. Is stay safe, not just from the coronavirus, from the thought police now.
That's right.
The pre-crime squad.
The pre-crime, yes. Thank you for watching, everyone. We will be back next week, same time, possibly, at least on the Right Minds people, for the New Zealand people, we will be on the Right Minds channel. It's still going to be around next week. We hope that you do indeed stay safe and stay free, and we will catch you all. Have a good weekend.
Good night, everybody.